Hello, and welcome to another episode of Technically Biased. Today's guest is Shay Brown, the founder and CEO of Babble AI and an associate professor of instruction at the University of Iowa. In addition to astrophysics, which he has his PhD in, he also specializes in AI ethics and machine learning with a focus on algorithmic auditing and AI governance. So thank you so much for being here today, Shay. Can you please start off by further introducing yourself and sharing more about your trajectory from astrophysics to AI?
Thank you very much for having me. My path to AI was a little bit strange. I got my PhD in astrophysics and came to University of Iowa as a professor. And the job I got was a professor of instruction. So I started out as a lecturer. And so the nice thing about that is that they didn't really tell me what to research. And so I had a lot of freedom. My job was just to teach, be a good instructor. And so I started broadening my horizons and started using AI for astrophysics because there's so much data. If we had everybody on Earth spending their entire lives, we couldn't look at all the data we're getting from the sky. And so machine learning and AI is a really important and powerful tool that we're going to continue to need in that field. And so I taught myself basically. And then I started getting interested in starting a business. And originally I was thinking I'm going to, build robots for NASA or AI to run their space station or something. But as I started doing research into how AI was used in the real world, I started realizing there was this problem, lots of incidences where AI turned out to be biased. It was used improperly. It was harming people. It was causing problems, safety even. And so I pivoted, and the business ended up focusing on algorithmic auditing, which was something I felt I had a good brain for. My scientific mind kind of lended itself towards this type of thing. And the auditing was not so much technical, which is a big aspect of it that is technical testing of systems. But it really was on sort of the more socio-technical. How is the way AI being used more broadly, not just the technology, the algorithm itself, the way it's being used, how could that potentially harm people? And that's kind of been the focus ever since.
And you use the term algorithmic auditing specifically, which is a term I really love, but it's not something that many people are familiar with. So is that something you can dive into to explain what that is and why it's so necessary going from anything from astrophysics to the other work you focus on?
Yeah. So if you think about an audit in general is normally some sort of check to make sure that something is being done according to a standard. Like financial auditing, they're checking that people are appropriately doing their books and following the right procedures and ultimately getting the right answers at the end. And algorithm auditing or AI auditing is very similar to that, in that there are certain standards that we have that might be really simple things like we don't want to harm people, or we don't want to infringe on people's rights, or something more specific like there needs to be a human in the loop when decisions are made based on algorithmic outputs. Those kind of things, you can audit against those. You can check to make sure that people are actually doing those things. And so that's one sense of algorithm auditing or AI auditing that I talk about. Now, I think the term actually in the field gets used very broadly, which is okay. People use the words a lot. And I think a lot of what people consider more broadly in the field is the sort of interrogation of an AI system or an algorithmic system to figure out ways in which it could potentially go wrong or harm people. I think that's probably sums up the way most people would think about that, because is the primary concern, I think, for most people in the field.
And you mentioned that you work with algorithm auditing from an technical point of view, but also the governance and risk management angle. So can you also discuss the difference there and the importance of auditing in both perspectives?
Yeah, so I think so there's a very narrow technical aspect of auditing where you literally have an algorithm or an AI system which takes data in, that data gets processed, and it produces some output. And that output is then used to do something. And that's a very sort of concrete chain of events which, were it to sort of mess up, or you want to understand the performance of that sort of chain, that algorithmic part. And so the technical portion of that is really like, how accurate is that algorithm? What happens with how accurate is the output? What quality is the data coming into it? What was the quality of the data that was used to train that algorithm? Because typically there's a training process that's involved using some historical data. And so all of those aspects are sort of what I would call the technical aspects. Now, a layer above that, there of course is the activities of people in that system that could affect ultimately what the harm might be at the end. So that's much more of the governance. And I think it's important that we know from years of sort of risk management, and there are risk professionals out there that just focus on mitigating risk. There are also people who do, human rights impact assessments. There's an environmental impact assessments. There are many fields of people who focus on how do you govern a process in a way that minimizes risk. And that's something that needs to be applied to that AI system, the way you would apply it to any kind of system that would have a consequential impact on people. And so both of those aspects need to be, in my mind, audited in some way, because right now companies essentially, it's like, take our word for it that the algorithm works. We can't show you the algorithm. That's typically the answer, but take our word for it that it works. And take our word for it that we are doing the right things. The governance around that to make sure that that works and to make sure that things it's used appropriately. And I think that can't continue. And I think most regulators and would agree that that's not something that you can just rely on, because it's being used in so many places where there are very consequential impacts, like whether you get hired, whether you get social benefits, if whether you crash into another car if you're talking about autonomous vehicles. So I think both of those aspects have to be checked and audited for in terms of really forcing accountability.
So that takes me perfectly into my next question, which is American regulations are a lot more lax than other countries. So can you discuss our regulations compared to those, for instance, if you want to touch on the EU GDPR or something else, and the obstacle we face in that America is exporting so much of its technology globally, which means our lack of regulations are not just impacting and harming our citizens, but a global audience.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. I think so for sure the region that is doing the most is the EU. And I think the GDPR, as you mentioned, is a very important privacy law that does touch upon automated processing of personal data. So there's an AI aspect in there in GDPR, which is only kind of recently getting used. However, there's a comprehensive law, the EU AI Act, that has now, I'm not going to say it's passed, but I think April is when we're expecting it to finally pass. And that's a much more comprehensive sort of monolithic piece of legislation, which will require all of these things that I was just talking about in terms of technical testing and governance and all of that. That will impact the entire world. Because if you want to sell in Europe, and I think everybody wants to sell their AI in Europe, they're going to have to adhere to this. Now, regarding the US, I think that there's we have a different approach. And I actually, in some sense, we are under-regulating AI, where we could be regulating a lot more. And I think what we're seeing is that in the US, we have laws in place already to protect people's sort of civil liberties, fundamental rights, right? You have the right not to be discriminated against. There's the FTC is going to regulate consumer protection. You can't have people lying to you or misrepresenting their products. There are all sorts of ways in which these regulators have laws in place that they can enforce when it comes to AI. And it's only recently that they've started to really focus on that. And it's a different model, basically. It's that you have regulators that maybe or ideally could act more nimbly to react to new technology, or you come up with a comprehensive set of laws. And I think it remains to be seen, actually, which of those two systems are going to be more effective. Right now, the regulators are not really going after people that might use algorithms to discriminate, even though it's still against law to discriminate just because it's done by an algorithm. So it's taking some time, but I think it remains to be seen how effective that is. And the same thing with the EU AI Act. We don't yet know how much of an impact these regulations will have, because sometimes if you spell everything out that you need to do, people will just tick the boxes and get it done, and it doesn't actually really, in the end, mitigate much of the risk or harm to people. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that both of them will play a role, but I'm also I have some pessimism that there's going to be some holes that we'll have to fill somehow.
And again, that brings me to my next question. So you mentioned that a lot of companies argue that, we're doing the right thing, we're doing our due diligence, but our algorithms are private. We cannot show you, we will not show you. So why, you touched on this, but why is transparency and accountability so important? And do you think that we can achieve higher ethical standards while maintaining corporate profits, right? Because right now, I think that's what so many companies are worried about. How do we maintain our originality and how do we maintain our financial standards, whatever that is? So, how do we address this so that everyone is happy?
I think everyone will not be happy. I think in the end, I think regulations are a burden on a company. If they have to spend money doing something that they wouldn't have spent money on before. However, I think there is an upside, and it focuses on trust, I think, and trustworthiness. And if we're thinking about the upside potential, why is transparency and accountability important? I think it comes down to trust, in that if a company is accountable for what their system does, and demonstratedly so, like they have accountability mechanisms in place, and if there's transparency in the processes. And it doesn't, transparency can mean many different things. It doesn't have to be, I can see your code, right? Or I'm going to steal your IP. It can be simply, are you telling people that there is an algorithm being used? Are you telling them what kind of data you're taking? Are you explaining roughly how the system works? Like, what are the important features about your resume that ended up you not getting this job? Those sort of things. That is a form of transparency that it doesn't cost anybody anything in terms of intellectual property. It might cost things in terms of risk, because if someone knows that it was because of this factor, then the company might be liable for that, or they might be sued because of that. So I think that transparency is important for building trust. I think accountability is important for building trust and trustworthiness. And I think we as a society have to push down on the companies, even though it will be a burden. But if some companies take that burden on themselves, it could be a differentiator, because when everything is run on algorithms in the future, which, I mean, that's not a crazy thought, and it's not that far away, there's going to be a lots of companies that are trying to sell these algorithms, and there are going to be lots of choices. And so, as a consumer, let's say, who do you choose when you have a choice of algorithms or platforms that you want to interact with? Or and the choice will be made based on, do I believe that this brand or this company has my best interests at heart? And if they don't have that trustworthiness, they're going to lose. And I think that's the upside to starting this kind of process early.
And when we look at biased algorithms, we can either see the bias in the data itself or in the model and what the model decides to focus in on. So some examples that come to mind are the sensitivity of these algorithms being used in healthcare, in financial decisions, in the legal system, whether that's in the judicial process or the policing process. So, have you worked with anything or seen anything that is extra alarming or that made you think a certain way of how we should move forward to make sure that we don't continue reinforcing these biases in these ways?
Yeah, I think the general rule of thumb is that, in my mind, this is my opinion, the general rule of thumb is if you are using historical data to make predictions about the future, you're going to encode some biases. And the clear bias is what happened in the past. So there's almost no way around that. There are ways of mitigating bias for sure. And but we see it in everything. Hiring algorithms, they're biased. Algorithms used to decide whether someone gets a loan or not, biased. Whether someone should be is a good potential renter, like to screen renting applicants, biased. These are all end up being biased. And so I think they're all alarming. And that's why I got into this, is because I think that those things need to be considered. But the other aspect is, I think as a general rule of thumb, there's also bias that happens when you automate a process. So forget machine learning or data. If I take a process that was once done by a human and I automate that process, by definition, what I have to do is I have to take every single input that I would have gotten as a human, and I have to cram it into and make it conform to this automated process. So filling out forms in a certain way, I have to make decisions about what kind of credit history I want to take in, or what kind of work history and how that looks like, whatever it may be. And when you do an automated task like that, you by definition are going to introduce biases, because some people are not going to have data that's going to conform exactly to the way you imagined it. Some people will not have access to technology that will allow them to get into the system in the same way. I mean, think about the difference, like what kind of something that is using a smartphone in order to make a decision, or data from a smartphone. Well, if people don't have smartphones, that's filtering them out immediately, right? So I think that those sorts of things always introduce bias. And so then the question is, how do we mitigate that? And one answer is going through the data and trying to remove things that might encode that bias. That's often not going to be possible to remove all of it, because there are so many systemic biases in our society that there are going to be proxies for protected categories like race or gender or ability status or whatever. And so it's going to be hard to extract that. And so then I think what has to happen is that you need to have tough conversations about, what does fairness mean? How do we want to make these decisions? And issues of procedural fairness and of substantive fairness, you have to be thinking about the difference between those and how you manage that. But it's a tough conversation, and it's exciting. It's one that we have to have, because when we have AI, the things that I don't want to ramble now, but the things that, like, why is AI different? Why are these algorithm systems different? That's a pretty, because people have been discriminated against for a long time. People have had all sorts of unfairness dealt out. They've had opportunities lost for whatever reason. And what's different is that this can happen extremely quickly when you automate it. It can happen at a really large scale. So it can happen to, if a problem happens, it happens to many, many people at once and fast. And then the third thing is it can happen without people knowing it. There's a lack of that transparency. It goes back to that transparency issue. You can be harmed without even knowing you've been harmed. That perfect opportunity that could have been yours never showed up on your feed, and you will never know that because of some algorithm that filtered and made it a choice for you. And so all of these things are super tough, and that's what makes this field so exciting and I think impactful, is that we need a lot of humans thinking very hard about solutions to those problems.
And you mentioned proxies, and I think that's very important because when we address bias, we usually look for the specific biases. But during the pandemic, the International Baccalaureate exam decided exams are canceled. Let's build a model to predict everyone's grades so we don't have to reimburse them. And it ended up happening that the proxy they used was focused on class. So anyone in a low-income family essentially received very low grades because in America with such high educational academic tuition, that is one of the proxies, right? You are more likely to succeed if you have the money to afford a better degree. So that was shocking. But now that you've given us that background, can you tell us what does Babel AI do and how do you address this to try to mitigate the harms? And how do you work with your clients to make sure that they understand the process?
Yeah, so when we do sort of consulting type work where we're not auditing somebody and we're actually doing the work, I think most of what our methodology centers around is the initial risk assessment process. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do, and it's something we spent the most time researching and road testing and iterating on. And essentially what the process entails is figuring out what the socio-technical system is, like getting your mind around for any given system that does something, let's say that tries to detect fraud in some social services system, like what happened in the Netherlands. You have to understand what are all the moving pieces, and so what kind of data is taken in, how does it process that data, what's the output, what's the consequential action that gets taken after that output. Who's involved in the process, what institutions and organizations, and how do they interact? What's the context? What's the history? What's the politics of it? And then once you have this context, then what you have to focus on is who are the stakeholders? And anybody who's done like a human rights impact assessment will recognize this kind of thinking. And what we really focus on is identifying what are the ways in which those stakeholders, all of them, could potentially be impacted by this socio-technical system, positively or negatively. But we do end up focusing on the negative because most of the time the positive has been factored in when they built the thing in the first place. So once you identify what are the ways in which a person could be harmed, and you need to be very imaginative about that. And simultaneously, we focus on what are the ways in which you could cause harm or the system could fail in some way, like some misunderstanding. And then what we do is we have to try to match up these potential failures and harms with the kind of causes and make sure we understand for every potential mode or failure that could happen, how does that cause harm? And that's an iterative process that you need diverse stakeholders. Really need to think very hard about it and do some investigation. Once you have that though, once you have this sort of like, here's a very dis either discrete harm, or you can also think about it in terms of like what are the interests in which stakeholder interests which could be infringed upon potentially. And then you have connected that to some piece of the socio-technical system, whether it be the algorithm itself, like how biased it is, or like false positive rate or something like that. Or maybe it's, how does the person who is making the taking the action after they receive the output, what is their understanding of what that output means? That's If they have a misunderstanding about that, or if they have some personal biases, that could be a vector for hurting someone. But once you have that all mapped out, then it's almost very easy to identify, okay, we need more education for this person. How do we train them so they understand to overcome their own biases? How do we retrain the model so that the false positive rate goes down? Because that we've identified that as a significant cause of harm. How do we increase transparency so we relieve anxiety about people who are applying for social services and so they feel that's a harm, right? And that's how we do it. That's our methodology. And at the end of the day, it all has to tie, whatever activity you're doing, it has to tie back to what is that consequential thing that could happen that could impact somebody's life? And you need to be able to draw that line right to where you're going to be making the intervention. And if you can't do that in a very clear way, then you haven't really understood the system well enough to meaningfully intervene.
So you mentioned stakeholders. Do you feel that you get any pushback from some of the stakeholders you work with, or if they're coming to you, are your clients more inclined to be cooperative and agree with whether it's suggestions or in general the consultation you provide?
Yeah, so it's a self-selected group at the moment because most companies that would seek our help are doing it because they feel like they want to, like that they feel compelled, and it's sort of a supererogatory thing. It's not like they're doing it because they're being forced to do it. And so, for the most part, we've had very cooperative clients. It doesn't mean that every stakeholder within an organization is totally on board with this endeavor, because I think it takes some education to understand, like, why do am I worrying about this? If my piece in the whole puzzle, let's say, as a data scientist or as a lawyer who's doing something or a product owner, why am I having to think about these things? That should be somebody else's job or whatever. And I think there's always pushback when you don't understand why you're wasting, quote unquote, wasting your time to do some of this stuff. But I think in general, overall, companies are doing this because they want to. Now, I don't think this is always going to be the case. And right now, with regulations like the EU AI Act, a lot of companies are going to be forced to do something because of the regulatory risk, the compliance risk, but they're not quite culturally in terms of they're not there yet. They don't know why they really need to do it. And a lot of this is a culture problem within a company. Like, do you have the right kind of mindset to prioritize risks of this type and mitigating risks of this type? And not every company does. And these kind of regulations will force them, or these sort of engagements, let's say if we were to work with them, would force them to think about things that they don't necessarily aren't ready or haven't really aren't motivated to think about at the moment.
So you mentioned that you're cautiously optimistic, but still with a bit of pessimism. So as we continue moving forward, do you think we're moving in the right direction, or do you think we're kind of breaking things at too fast a pace for us to keep fixing it?
That's a good question. I think that my pessimism has not been decreasing with time. I think that, but my certainty about what's going to happen has also decreased with time because things are moving so quickly. And I don't think any of us, unless maybe there's some prophets out there that know, but I don't think any of us really know what the end game is going to be. Because AI is becoming very powerful, it's becoming very integrated. And I think regulations are not keeping up and regulators are not keeping up. And so I think that it remains to be seen. And I think there is a lot of room for potential harm. Now, I also think that I could be wrong, and it could be the AI unlocks a ton of positive benefits, and we really advance in science and we advance in our ability to like prosper in terms of like wealth equality and things like this. But I'm not seeing signs of that yet. I'm not seeing like it's not a slam dunk that that's going to happen at all. And I think that there's a real possibility that it just increases inequality, centralizes power, and kind of a lot of people end up getting sort of pushed more to the fringes. And I think that's a real worry. So I would say probably all in all, slightly more pessimistic, but it motivates me to keep working on this even more.
I agree with that. So I have so many more questions for you, but as the time is coming to an end, what would your last comments be in general regarding anything that our audience maybe should be more aware of or what you've witnessed? What are the topics that require our attention?
I think that if I were to leave your audience with one thing, it would be we need more people doing this. And I think there's, as we're seeing AI being used in a lot of different areas that potentially are going to force people out of jobs, and we'll see the extent and how fast that happens. One question is what is there left to do, right? Unless you want to dig ditches or do something very physical that AI can't do at the moment. And I think one area that is going to increase is the need for this kind of governance, this kind of people who are able to think creatively about how we solve some of these really difficult problems, around how do we use AI in ways that is going to prioritize human flourishing. And I think that's something that we need more smart people, more passionate people to work on. And so I think that it doesn't matter what your background is. I think there's room for everybody's perspective. I think having a particular lived experience is qualifies you to weigh in on the extent to which these automated systems could harm you and people like you. And I think we just need more people in this conversation. And so I would just encourage those who are listening, if they want to participate, there's ways to participate in actually mitigating these risks.
Again, I couldn't agree more. So thank you, Shay, for your insights. I appreciate having you on.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Technically Biased. Tune in for our next episode with Sasha Stoikov, a senior research associate at Cornell Financial Engineering in Manhattan, but also the founder of Picky, a startup that gamifies music ratings. We will be discussing what goes into song quality algorithms and address his papers and the provocative questions: are the popularities of artists like Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift truly justified? Tune in to find out. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.